CliffCentral.com. One of the few female journalists in South Africa who really follows the sports beat to its letter, specializing in football, tracking the Premier Soccer League, as well as the National First Division. Her career spans almost two decades. She hosts The Touchline on Radio 2000, which infuses sport and lifestyle. She's also the host of a magazine show on SABC called The TKO, and she's the first female boxing anchor on this platform. Chats all things TKO to the boxing community within South Africa. She's here this morning, and we're going to talk to her about all kinds of things: childhood, her career, her awards, a series that we're going to be doing with her called Babies Behind Bars, and all kinds of other things. So please put your hands together and welcome to the studio this morning none other than Romy Titus. Like your fanfare?
That is a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
How are you?
All good, thanks.
Good. You're looking fantastic. You seem to be in really a good state in terms
really?
Of... Yeah, you look
I've
happy.
I've had about 4 hours sleep. I have a 1.5-year-old and
well,
didn't have a very good night.
You wear very good makeup then.
Thank
Let
you.
Let me take that back. Let's start again. Let's pretend... Wow, Romy, you look terrible this morning.
Thank you. That's the best compliment I've ever received in a very long time. Very honest, too.
You have a 1-year-old?
She's 1.5.
Oy,
yeah.
You don't get any sleep
no,
at all.
No, no, no. Sleep, what's that?
But you run, you've got so much going on. You've got this career.
Yeah.
How do you manage?
You don't. You always try for a balance. I think every morning that's what I wake up to try and do. I try and balance everything. Spend enough time with my daughter. Try and house train a new little pet that we adopted a few weeks ago.
You added a pet to the
We
mix?
Added a pet to it all. I some days
You're
I don't
a sucker
think I'm
for
okay.
punishment.
Yeah, that's me.
All right, let me ask you something. Do you go through like energy drinks or is there some, how do you, I think about this often. I think about people who have kids.
Of late, yes.
Yeah, look.
It's something that I never used to do, but something's got to give.
I don't have kids and I still sleep badly sometimes because I'll wake up in the middle of the night or, you know, I don't sleep through.
Mm.
And then I get to work and I'm grumpy. But it's so much harder when it's a kid.
My blood type is coffee.
Oy, oy, oy. How do you even get to, I mean, and you're doing serious work. Like if you don't perform in front of the camera, if you're not on top form,
mm-hmm.
people will be pissed off. They can tell.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm sure they will.
Oy, how do you manage?
You don't, but you try.
Jeez.
It's all about priorities at the end of the day.
That's
I do my best. Some days are better than others.
Well, I'm impressed. Hey, did you give birth? I heard this in water. You did a water birth.
I did.
So, I don't want to get into any of the gory details.
I don't mind sharing.
Okay, so tell me how the water birth works. Are you in a bath?
I'm in a bath of, it's not too deep, right? And it's warm water, so it kind of soothes and you don't feel your contractions as badly as you would when you're outside the water.
All right.
And I read a book many years ago by a French gynecologist who actually came up with the whole water birth, you know? It's called, I forget the name, Birth Without Something.
What? Hang on.
Birth without violence. There we go.
How deep is the water?
It's not very deep. So maybe just covers you over your tummy.
Okay.
Kind of thing.
All right.
And you have free reign, free movement.
Are you lying down? Are you sitting up?
You can do whatever you want.
Wow.
And that is what I wanted. I didn't want to be restricted. I wanted my body to lead me and for me to be comfortable in whichever position. If I wanted to do a handstand and give birth that way, I wanted to be able to do that. And not very many places allow you to do that. And so
yeah.
I wanted the whole holistic approach. I didn't have anything. I didn't even take a Panado. And I wanted really my body to lead me, which it did.
And it was a pleasant experience?
You know what? Everybody's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. There's nothing beautiful about it.
No.
You know, it's hard. It's painful. It's a whole lot of emotions all in, you know, rolled into one. And at the end of the day, you get to meet the love of your life. And so for me, that connection was the most beautiful, you know, compared to everything else that I had to go through that day.
And you have two kids, right?
Only one.
Only one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So her name is?
Hira Sarai.
Hira Sarai. Where did you get those names from? Hera was the wife of Zeus.
That's it, the Greek goddess. So right. Of love and relationships. And the other meaning is warrior as well.
By the way, Hera was also extremely jealous, and she was not very nice to a lot of other women.
We don't want to know that part. We don't.
She was mean to all the other women.
So I loved the name. And
Hera.
I had so many names. It was either going to be Hera. It was going to be Sarai as her first name. Noah.
Sarai, where does that come from?
Sarai means Sarah. It's from the Bible, actually. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. I love the meaning. I love the way it rings. It means princess. So I've got a warrior princess at home. And I found all these names on nights when I couldn't sleep.
I think that's beautiful that you've actually put some thought into it. You hear some people name their kids horrible names. They make up names. You think, you know, they smash together the one grandmother and the other grandmother's names, and it just sounds terrible. Don't think
and
about
she's
it
got
at
a,
all.
She's got to respond to this name for the rest of her life. So Hera. Best it be powerful and that. Meaningful. Yeah.
And with a surname like Titus, mm-hmm. Hera Titus. I mean,
Hera
that's just...
Hera Sarai Titus.
That's power.
I can see it in lights. Mm. No, I can't. I'm lying.
No, but that does. She does sound like a mythological Greek character. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's beautiful. All right. So let's just talk for a minute about your... This craving, because you had some of those during the pregnancy, a lot of moms do. This is a year and a half back. You cast your mind back if mm-hmm, you can. Mm-hmm. You were craving what?
Oh, Ross.
Of all the things. That you could possibly crave. Isn't it really bad for you, Oros?
Look, I wasn't about to read anything on the label or anything. I know that I had...
Tartrazine.
Oros? No, it's tartrazine free now.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I had Oros ice blocks in the fridge, which I had with my Oros. I went through, I don't know how many liters, but Oros. Oros was my thing.
Okay,
I don't really like it that much now.
Does she like it?
I don't give her Oros.
You can't have... One day she's going to discover it and she's going to be hooked. It's going to be like a massive addiction. Yeah. All right, let's just talk about your career for a second because there are a lot of things here that people are very interested in. You've been on television and on radio for a long time. Mm-hmm. What out of all of these things that you've done, all the sports stuff, all the news stuff, all the other stuff, what is it that you like the most? Because you've had a career now that's spanned a few years, so you have a lot of experience. There must have been along the way stuff that you knew immediately you didn't enjoy doing, and there was stuff that you thought, I want to do more of this.
I always knew I wanted to be a journalist from the age of 5 already. I used to watch the news at 8 o'clock with my dad, and I had a curfew of 8, and I had to go to bed. So he said, if you didn't go to bed, I had to watch the news, which I did. I didn't know half the things that was happening there, but I just knew that if Rian Krevachen can command so much respect in the Titus household, well, then that's what I'm going to do one day. Yes. And I used to watch the news with him and learn really about what was happening in the world. As I got older, I would ask the questions and he would kind of explain to me news and politics and what was really going on. And that was sort of my introduction to journalism. And then I studied journalism and I knew I wanted to be a mouthpiece for the people and speak on their behalf. And, you know, whatever happens on the ground that is of public interest, I wanted to be mm-hmm. the mouthpiece for that. And I got to do that at a rather young age, at the age of 19, sent out to do stories.
Where was your first job with
ETV?
ETV, yeah.
Right. So I came straight from school into my internship. And, man, it was terrible. The landscape of crime in the country at that point was at its highest. And
crime and violence and murder.
I've seen
and
all it
all.
So at 19, I have seen raped children, mutilated children, dead people, hacked people, you name it. I mean, there's a special place for these people. They live in my heart and in my head because what you see is firsthand. Sometimes you're the first media.
But Romy, hang on. Sorry, I cut off your mic by mistake. Sometimes you're the first medium. You just finish that sentence. I got
you're the first
like.
Media on the scene.
Does it affect you?
Of course it does.
Because
I think
at 19, you're...
It's a little tender. It is. I think I was overly ambitious, and this is what I wanted to do. I won't take it back. I won't go back into time and change anything. But there was a time where I stepped out of the car, I remember, not knowing what the story was about. Seeing the mortuary van in Dubai and knowing, okay, someone must have died here. And then getting out the car to only discover the head of the baby on the tarmac on a boiling hot day with the flies packing. And I got back into the car and I shut the door. And for me, that's the day that the separation began between what I do and who I am. And then I thought, do I get out with my pen and paper or do I sit here and cry? And I figured this is what I signed up for, right? I signed up for this and I have to get to the bottom of the story. Why is this baby's head here? Where are the limbs? How did it get here? And it's one of the stories that still, it bothers me a little bit because it the case was never closed. And they thought it could have been a Muti killing. It could have been a stillborn, although the baby looked quite big to me. So it didn't look like a tender little baby. And then a few minutes later, the dog runs past and there's a limb in the dog's mouth. So we're like, okay, we have a head and we've got an arm or a leg. Oh, I don't quite remember.
What a horrific story.
And that's it. And that's how the story ends. So I filed the story and I remember calling the police station for weeks, for months thereafter, just saying, have you found the other part of this baby's body? Where's the mom? Oh. And it's still kind of open-ended where it's not solved.
Well, I mean, after covering stuff like that, you're pretty much bulletproof.
I am. You know, often people say to me that they can't really penetrate or you can't really read me, you know. Or I like my friends say, you've got a stank face.
like nothing seems to get you.
I was like, look, my stank face protects me. And if you know me, you'll know that that is not me. But
But you've got a guard against becoming
cold.
There
is a shield. Right? There is a shield.
You've got a guard against in your own life. Becoming so cold and unempathetic because in your journalist life, you have to be detached.
Yeah, or desensitized, I think. To a degree, that is what happened. It's why I left Hard News, because I had enough. I had enough of arriving on the scene and having a man hold my ankle as he takes his last breath. And I'm thinking, I shouldn't be staring at you and you shouldn't be staring at me. And having just to say a prayer for this man because I don't really know what else to do. And that is how I left for sport, because I thought I did what I could possibly and humanly manage, you know, out here in the backdrop of trying to be the mouthpiece. Then make that transition to sport, which is completely different, where there's a winner and a loser and we all go home. And I enjoyed that far better.
Well, the most controversial sport's going to get is if there's a referee that decides something the wrong way or...
But the news junkie in me likes that. I love that. So I run kind of towards all of that when it does happen, you know, run towards the bullets, even though it's nothing compared.
But you ended up doing quite a lot of other stuff too. I mean, you went to sport, but you also did the lotto for 5 years.
I did.
That must have been fun because there's no consequence there except for someone who wins a whole lot of money.
There's so much consequence. It's a high-powered 5 minutes of live television, unscripted, and you've got to make it in that 5 minutes.
Of course, if there's a screw-up, it costs someone a lot of money, if not their job.
That's it. I have not called the number wrong in my 5 years.
Yay!
Wow.
So you didn't know that, Sia?
It is a difference between a millionaire. It's unscripted. So that is just me winging it, and I get the biggest rush. It's like... It's my drug.
It's all up to you.
It's my drug.
That's a lot on the line. I didn't know it was unscripted.
It's unscripted. So that is just me picking up the paper, checking how many times the balls have fallen, or trying to decide which how I'm going to spin it today.
Do you make your own rhymes?
I did.
Oh. Do you please give me one?
It was like drug biz, lucky legs, number 11. You know, I kind of brought sport into it
as
well.
Sounds like bingo. do you get more nervous when it's a big amount of money?
You know that there's a lot of people watching.
Sure.
Yeah. And the pressure's on me not to call the number wrong, because 1331, that is a difference between a millionaire, you know, and not a millionaire. And then somebody's really going to just not be happy with me for calling their number when it wasn't. So it's pressure, but I thrive under pressure. So I really, really enjoyed that.
And then the weekend, morning edition, all of that stuff, those are much more fun shows. Those are kind of much more magazine type
shows.
Yeah,
that is magazine type shows right in the beginning of my career, you know. So that's kind of where I was groomed, you know. I was thrown in the deep end at the age of 20 and said, this is live television. That's camera 1, 2, 3. This means cue. Off you go. And that was my introduction.
And you just have to make it up.
Yeah, and actually, I loved it. I loved the noise in my ear, having to keep it together. And I think I found out that day that this is it. This is what I want to do. That's it.
All right. But in all of this, and to go back to the question, I asked right at the beginning, what is it that you like the most? What is the thing that turns you on the most? Because you've got all of these different abilities. Mm-hmm. And you really can. You can span the whole lot of them. But is it the hard news? Is it the more magazine stuff? Is it the sport? Is it the lotto? I mean, these are so varied.
It's the human side, I think, that I'm more interested in. It's telling stories. It's uncovering what no one really knows. That is the part that I enjoy the most, extracting information from people. In whichever way it is, it doesn't have to be forceful. It doesn't have to be anything other than just their real coming out of their shell to share their stories. And we all have a story.
Well, speaking of stories, this leads me on to something that you take very seriously. That's a big part of your life, Babies Behind Bars. Mm-hmm. So obviously a lot of people don't even know this, but it's something that when you think about it, it should be obvious that this happens. There are a lot of women who end up in prison for various reasons. Sometimes it's petty crimes. Sometimes it's very serious crimes. A lot of these women go into prison pregnant mm-hmm. or end up pregnant mm-hmm. at some point, and the kids are born behind bars.
That's right.
It's quite an interesting universe. The way that these kids are raised, the things that they are given, things that they're deprived of, it's kind of sad in some ways, because what a way to start your life as a child, to be born inside prison. It's something that there must be stories that are just absolutely riveting.
I am happiest when I am behind bars.
Oi.
Because
never heard anyone say that
before. Stories that you hear are just incredible. They're untold, they're raw, they're real.
Yeah.
And it's like me and you driving down the street hitting somebody, for example. You didn't mean to, but it happened, you know? And you end up in another world completely different to the world that you're used to. But some of these women are in here with harrowing stories that they very openly share with you. There's a woman that I know, she's passed away now, but actually went to jail in a wheelchair. Her husband had beaten her up so badly that she became paralyzed, a quadriplegic. And one day he came to beat her up while she was in this wheelchair. And she turned around, she was cooking at the time, and stabbed him. She killed him and went to jail. He beat her up that she was crippled, and nothing ever happened to him.
Well, he did die.
In the end, he did, Gareth.
He did die. I mean, you know, it's not exactly just desserts, because yes. He sounds like a horrible person.
And then you just think, now where's the justice in that?
No
one ever stood up for the poor woman, you know. Or another lady whose husband owed her money. They ran a shebeen. She was in one room one day, and she actually had him killed in the next room because he never paid back her money.
Sure. Well, you see, that's why it's important to pay back money.
You're just sitting there and you're just thinking, how? And
did both
and
of these
why?
Women have children?
And some do and some don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would imagine also there are a lot of women who don't want to have children in prison. And
you do.
And the kinds of things that they will do to prevent
you
that child
do.
From being
you
born.
You do want to have a child when you're in prison. Because
you do?
If you look at the prison system and how it works, they're more lenient towards a woman who has a child. So you'll find that women often commit crimes over and over, or they'll come back into prison having committed the crime again, pregnant again, back into the system, because life is somewhat sweeter, for a lack of a better word,
when you have a baby.
It's
almost like you get looked after.
You do, because of the child. Yeah. So you're in a mom and baby section. Your cell gets locked at night, but not your individual cell. So you can still walk around with your baby at night, or push them in a pram if you're allowed a pram. You've got a little bit more free rein. There's a fridge, so you can put in formula or food.
Sounds like
or
a very high security hotel.
It's not as nice as I'm making it sound, but there are those niceties, you know, as opposed to you just being locked up in your single cell at night. So you often find that you come into prison, you're like, but you're here again. Once you're released, didn't you have the baby already? And they're back into
I hate to sound insensitive, but who's paying for all these children?
We are. The taxpayers
are.
Okay. The taxpayers are. Very little of our tax goes towards the baby. More tax goes towards the mother. So that's where Babies Behind Bars kind of comes into the fold.
And how does it all work? How long is a woman in prison allowed to keep a baby?
So you can only keep your baby up until the age of 2. A few years ago, it was up until the age of 5. And then they brought it down because they realized that between 0 and 5 formative years of a child's life, I guess you're learning things, right? But you're learning all the wrong things.
Yeah.
You're learning the orange overall. You're learning all the swear words, the slang. there's a baby in Kroonstad prison that can smuggle a note at the age of 2 from one end of the prison to the other.
Oh, no.
And she's 2 years old.
Oh, that's a skill?
It's a skill. It is. And that,
it's a very special skill.
It's a survival skill. Sure. And that's what the moms
can you do that, Sia?
Teach the
you
children.
Can't do that. Don't you judge.
I'm not aiming to do that in life.
Smuggle perhaps. A note.
But it's sad that at 2, that's her life and that's what she can do already, you know? And so at the age of 2, the moms have to say goodbye to their babies. They go into welfare or to a family member that can afford to look after
that
them.
That must be harrowing.
I don't ever want to witness any of it.
Oh,
again.
My God. That must be horrible.
Because that's all they know. Their mom.
Yeah.
The prison, which is home for their entire 2 years, now they have to take their child out. They don't
the
know
crime?
Traffic lights, cars,
no,
nothing. They know nothing from the outside
world.
I
almost think it's better they learn to smuggle notes. Honestly.
80% of children born or raised in prison ages 0 to 5 come back into the system.
Of course.
80%.
80%. 80. I guess that's home. I always try and liken it to, in December, I go home to my family.
Mm.
I go home, I spend time with my family. That's their home. That's where it all started.
So you grew up in Cape Town and then Windhoek, right?
That's right,
in
yeah.
Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of a family life did you have?
We moved around every 4 years. My dad's an epidemiologist, so we kind of trekked wherever his next job was.
Follow massive outbreaks of disease.
That's right.
That's a nice thing for you to have to follow around the country.
I guess it's why health issues really intrigue me.
All right, children.
People.
Dad has just been called up. There's some Ebola in the northwest. We're going there.
It wasn't
crazy. Everyone wants to run away from disease. Yeah. And you guys
and
like
my
to
dad
run
runs towards
it.
So malaria and HIV. And he traveled extensively in Windhoek, all around Namibia, actually. And that's how we ended up there. I love Namibia. We go back to visit.
Are you like an honorary citizen there because you're famous and they you
well,
know,
I don't know about the fame part, but
you are
honorary citizen.
People, they're probably it's you, Bahati Prinsloo, who married Adam Levine,
yeah.
Brad and Angelina's 2 kids
because mm-hmm.
they're Namibians.
Good point.
Who else? There's got to be a couple of other famous Namibians, aren't there? Some athletes and things.
There's Frankie Fredericks.
Frankie Fredericks, thank
mm-hmm.
you. All right, well, you see, you're in a very select crew.
Michelle McLean.
Mm. She was Miss Universe,
wasn't
she?
That's it, yeah. And the whole entire winter came to a standstill. We actually didn't even go to class that day. And we all lined Kaiserstrasse and waited for her to come down the road to wave.
How's that?
Frankie, the same thing happened. We didn't go to school that day.
That's when you go back to Namibia,
and then we
I'm sure
just waved.
The same.
No.
Romy Titus is coming in Kaiserstrasse.
Shuts everything down.
We are going to rename Kaiserstrasse to Romy Titusstrasse.
Frankie actually got a road named after him. He did. He did.
I bet you there's one named after you. You just don't know about it.
Don't know about it yet, yeah.
Well,
but then you ended up finishing school here in Joburg, right?
I did, yeah. I went to Rand Park.
So you at least had some kind of stability for high school.
Mm-hmm.
You were mostly in one place.
We actually moved. We moved when I was in Standard 9 halfway through, and I kind of boycotted the move. At that point, I was like, I'm not moving.
I am not. You must have been sick of it, making new friends every time, being the new kid.
I moved house in my complex. I moved 3 doors down. Because moving, it's just
too much.
Yeah, no.
You went into journalism at Peninsula Technikon, which mm-hmm. is now Cape Peninsula University of Technology, and then you got your national diploma in journalism, and then from there you said at the ripe age of 19 you started hitting the beat with mm-hmm. journalists. Now, I'm also curious, at that stage, did you have any idea that you would end up doing so many varied things in the media? Was it your goal to end up being a hard journalist, and who was your role model? Like, who did you look up to at that stage?
Wow, role models. I actually looked up to my grandpa. His name was Alexander Titus.
And what was he? What did he do?
He was a boxer.
Really?
He was. He was a boxer. He only lost.
It's a great name for a boxer, huh?
Don't you think?
Alexander Titus.
And he could never obviously do it professionally, but he fought for Peninsula Harriers. That was his club. And then my granny came into the fold and said, well, you have to choose. It's either me or the boxing. So obviously he chose my granny. But he only had a Standard 3 education. He taught me so much. He taught me gardening. He taught me how to write my name. And I spent all my time with my grandpa. And I always said, oh, well, when I get to Standard 3, then I can stop, right? And he was like, no, you've got to carry on. You don't have to stop at Standard 3 because I did. You've got to go the whole 9 yards. And he had to stop because he had to start working and help his mom support family. And I really looked up to him because he raised 5 children, you know.
Wow.
And just did every... He's just my hero. So that really was my role model. Like, if Opa says I can do this...
You can do
then
it.
Then I can do
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you must have made him proud. I don't know if he lived to see you
He didn't.
Become...
He passed when I was in matric, sadly. Oh. Yeah.
Because he would have loved that you became the first female boxing anchor in South
Africa.
I did
it in memory of him, actually.
Really?
Because it landed on my lap and I was like, this is not quite the direction I want to go in. You know?
Boxing, sure.
I'm kind of football heavy and not really boxing. While I get the gist of what's going on there, I'm now going to have to go and sit down with this material and make myself understand it better, you know? And I didn't want to do it. I fought it for the longest time. And then I thought, but why not? You know, if not, why not? And if I don't make it, it's okay. And if I do, well, then I'm going to fly. And the first show I did in memory of my late grandfather.
That's amazing.
Wow.
I mean, it's also, it's such an unusual area to go into, especially for a woman, but just generally. I mean, there are only a few boxing journalists in the world.
Yeah.
And they're usually super specialists. And so for someone who didn't necessarily see that as the place that they wanted to end up, it must have been quite exciting to have kind of pioneered new territory.
It is. It is exciting. I mean, it's not as exciting when you're sitting ringside and that gum guard comes and hits you on your head.
That's
you know?
Gross. Sia would not deal with that.
I just got visible.
You kind of have to duck and the spit and the blood and the
sweat.
But it is so exciting, man,
Romy,
when you choose a side.
How many times has that happened to you?
Well, twice. A couple of spit drops also hit you, you know? So you kind of have to position
yourself
nicely.
Oh, when you
nicely.
Smash someone in the face with a boxing glove, there's a lot of sputum that comes out.
I'll take you with me one day.
Yeah, you know, I'm so grateful for the offer. But I'll give it a pass.
Radio is obviously very different too. I mean, you did Metro for how many years as the sports anchor?
Yeah, a while.
Oh. Did you enjoy that? Was it different? Was it more exciting than TV in some ways? Less?
They're so... two very different mediums. You know, I realized that I was a TV person one day when the mic went down in the studio and I just sat there.
You didn't know what to do.
I just sat there, like all poised. I just sat there. And when I was finished, the jock said, you're really a TV person because really, it's radio. No one's going to see you. Just move over to the next mic. But in television, you sit and you kind of blink, you know, and bat your eyelids and smile. And eventually someone comes and does it for you, you know. And I realized, actually, I do come from more of a TV background than what I do a radio background.
You just sat there.
I just sat there. I just composed. And I was just like, someone's got to do something and quick, you know. I enjoy them both for very different reasons. I think I'm a little more expressive when I am on radio because you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas television, you're spoiled. You've got the visuals. And so I don't really have to say that much other than hoping to educate every 10 seconds about something that you're not seeing.
Yeah. I mean, you're telling the story. You're painting the picture. Mm. There's a lot of imagination involved in radio. It's different to TV in that respect. So a couple of the things that you've been honored by. I mean, you've been recognized as one of the world's leading sports journalists by Laureus, which is incredible. And did you ever go to any of their awards?
I went to one in Malaysia.
Wow.
So I've been one of the media judges for the past, I think, 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Malaysian Laureus World Sports
Very
Awards.
Very nice.
I loved it, actually. I got to see Lewis Hamilton on the red carpet. And that just made my day.
Did he see you as the important part?
You know what? I actually had pink eye.
That's the worst time.
So I actually had to like do my hairstyle like to cover the eye and then kind of like wave, Lewis, like, hi, Romy from South Africa.
Oh, God, there's a gross woman with pink eye.
So I didn't call him up, you know, too loudly. And if he didn't come, it was kind of okay. But I got to see him nonetheless. I guess that's the important
part. See him out
part.
Of your one good eye.
It was terrible.
You were awarded the Mandela Washington Fellowship that was initiated by President Barack Obama. Did you get to meet him?
I didn't get to meet him, but he did quote me in his speech, actually.
What?
He did. I couldn't believe it. So...
I have a speech here from Romy Titus. What did
so
he say?
He quoted a couple of the fellows and all the different things that we had done. I had spoken to, I can't remember which network interviewed me when I was in New York. And I said, I have so many ideas bubbling in my brain because I was on the civic leadership for Babies Behind Bars. That's how I got the fellowship. And he quoted that part. And the rest of the speech was kind of like a blur, you know, because I'm just like, hey, hold on. I said that. I said that, you know.
Did he give you credit?
He did.
Okay, well, that's
decent. He did. And then he was still like, and so from this place, and so from that place.
But you didn't hear any of that.
No. I just heard that, hey, hold on. Roll me Titus. That's me. That's me.
That is the clip.
That was a moment. That was a moment. I do.
Yeah, you better have a recording of that.
I do. So that was a moment. That's cool.
All right, Ubuntu Award recipient, Paul Harris Fellowship by Rotary South Africa, 100 Young Leaders, independent newspapers list. Now, these are all, as a result, I'd imagine, of Babies Behind Bars.
Yes, it is.
Because that is a very unique and individual pursuit. It's something that you care deeply about. You're actually doing a podcast series with us.
That's right.
About it.
Yes, it's in the making.
Which I think a lot of people would be fascinated to hear. As you say, stories that are just harrowing, incredible, heartbreaking. And a place that I suppose most South Africans don't think about very much.
No,
prison. We think about prisons being full of men. We think about prisons being full of hard criminals, dangerous people. We think of prisons being full of nastiness and ugliness and bad food and smells. And I mean, how many prisons have you been into?
I wish I was in all 17 that we operate in, but not. I go to Joburg often, Kroonstad, Potch, Durban, and those are probably the ones that I visited the most.
If you had to go to prison, which one would you want to go to?
Joburg, Sun City,
really?
Without a doubt. I would still, this is my idea and my dream, and it hasn't yet come together, but I want to stay there for a week. I
don't five star?
No, I want to stay there just like everybody else.
I'm saying, is it a five star? I mean,
it's not a five
marble
star.
Marble bathrooms?
Had I gone to maybe Kroonstad, I would say that's five star. If there's any prison that a woman wants to be in, it's Kroonstad prison.
So why do you want to go to Joburg?
Because it is that harsh reality of prison.
Oh, whoa. My God. Would you put yourself
and
through that?
So I want to stay there for 7 days, right? I want to raise funds for Babies Behind Bars, and so you've got to bail me out. We said bail out at however much amount. And everybody pledges money, and every day I do a diary entry and about life. But I'm not treated any differently. I'm with the moms and the babies in that section. And every day I get to see
How did you get interested in this? This is not something that most people would gravitate towards. It sounds to me like you have a very deep connection to these moms and these babies.
I do. I somehow feel responsible, and I'm not too sure why. I guess long before I became a mother, I was a mother to 800 children in prison. And that was really what it is I wanted to do. Every single day, I'm at the storage, I'm on my computer, I am just trying to make life easier there for them. But how I actually met children in prison was doing a story for E! News at the time. It was a Christmas story, and I went there kicking and screaming because I'm the junior journalist and the intern, and no one actually really wants to give you the lead story. So like, oh, Romy, there's some frilly story about children in prison having a birthday party. Please go and cover it. And I was like, Anyway, get there, and then realize, hold on, there's children in prison. And this is supposed to be a Christmas party. Christmas at my house is tons of food, family, laughter, presents, sheer madness. And here there's just one sad little Christmas trimming. Winnie the Pooh is kind of half hanging on the wall there. Mm. And there's 30 mothers and children in one section.
God.
There's one bath and one toilet for all of these inmates and their children. It's so overcrowded that two moms sleep on a single bed. And then there's babies in the fold. And then there's one cream cake. And Mandoza's playing in the background. And there's a five-year-old little boy who can dance like it's nobody's business. And I'm like, and this is a Christmas party? And then they open the cake and everybody descends on the cake, but there's not enough to go around. And I'm just thinking, what Christmas party is this? And that's how I met children in prison, because this five-year-old boy, who was the cutest little thing under the sun, could talk to me and play with me, and the male cameraman that I was with picked him up and he'd scream blue murder.
Because he'd never really met men.
That's it. And eventually I said, what are you doing? And the warden said, but he doesn't know what a man is. And I thought, how do you not know what a man is when you're 5 years old and you're going to grow up to be a man? But his only interaction with a man was on a Thursday when one of the male inmates come over to female section to mow the lawn in an orange overall, and that is what he knows a man to be. That struck me really hard. I mean, compared to all the dead bodies that I've ever seen and the rape children and everything, I went home that day thinking, I don't quite understand this, you know. And it played over and over and over and over in my mind, and I just thought, no one's doing anything about children in prison. Do people know about children in prison? And then the penny dropped, and I thought, but hold on, you know, I'm willing and able, and I can do it.
It takes a brave person to first of all go into uncharted territory like that, to see the need and then to make something happen, because you quite could have quite easily reported the story and gone home.
I couldn't. It sat with me. Like, I sat on the couch, I remember that day, thinking, how, and I didn't even know how to start a nonprofit organization. I made it my Facebook status, and people actually helped me, and that was the start of Babies Behind Bars.
What do women in prison really need that they don't get?
Support.
What kind of support? What do you mean?
Support. So if a mother goes into labor, right, and you're alone at night, you start banging on the door. You bang, 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 and then everybody else will start banging as well. So eventually it's a loud bang because everybody's banging because you're in need. And eventually, hopefully, if somebody hears you, then someone will come in, call the nurse. By then you might have even given birth to your baby already. By yourself, in your cell. So I think support is needed. I understand that at the end of the day, these women are criminals and they are doing time for their crime. But I think everybody should have the right to a decent birth.
A water birth.
It might not even be that fancy. But just the basics, you know, some antenatal care, just the basics for you to know. Because in that time of need, you need somebody to hold on to. I've even disqualified as a doula, because that's the next part of my Babies Behind Bars, where I actually want to impart this and actually upskill the woman to become doulas so that they can help a mother who is in labor with the very basics that she needs, and they need support.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about how most women now giving birth, there's a ton of support. There's usually, first of all, they have a man or a husband or a boyfriend or someone, or even a mom, who can help them.
Yeah.
Then they've got the nurse, they've got a doctor, they've got drugs to make them feel better, they've got the postnatal care, they've got the someone to look after the kid in case the child is premature or anything like that. There's none of that in prison.
Absolutely none. Nothing. Nothing. Like I said, if they get to you in time...
It's like being in the wild.
If they get to you in time, you're lucky. And if not, well, then you've just got to knuckle down, hold on to those bars, and do it yourself.
True. Wow.
And so I think support is just so important.
And then that's only the beginning, because then you have to raise the child in prison, which is tough.
Another 2 years. Another 2 years of, like, disposable nappies, for example, is a luxury. So they still use toweling nappies. Mm-hmm. I remember taking a donation once in winter to Hosi Mumpuru in Pretoria. And the woman started singing. And I remember I drove a mini at the time and I loaded it. I only had nappies.
To the roof.
I loaded it to the brim. I couldn't even move in there. And I felt so bad driving this donation there, because I thought, this is all I have. And I so wanted to take more, you know, and all I have is disposable nappies. I get there and they come out and they help carry and they start singing and they go back into the prison. And because of that echo, it just sounds so loud. It still gives me goosebumps. And one of the moms comes out and she's just overjoyed by these nappies. And I'm still feeling like, it's not enough. You know, I could have done better. And she says, we use toweling nappies and I washed them this morning. They didn't dry in time. So I put a damp nappy on my baby.
Oh, God.
And I just thought, every little bit, I should never forget that, goes a long way. Because I thought that what I had wasn't enough. But when you realize the need inside the prison, I mean, I just made that mom's day. And there was enough probably to last them a month, you know, for the amount of babies that were in there at the time. And I just thought, I'm on the right track. I'm doing the right thing. And whenever I just want to give up and I don't want to do it anymore, I remember that damp nappy, you know, that went onto a baby, and I know I've got to do this.
Well, that kid would have had a rash. It would have had perhaps a whole lot worse.
Just how uncomfortable are you? You know,
I mean, and no one, that kid didn't ask to be born in a prison.
Didn't ask to be here.
I think it's amazing that you're doing this.
And thank you.
I can imagine that there are so many friends you've made through this as well. Enemies, like in the prison system.
You
they're
got
like,
it.
Oh, here comes that annoying, that's irritating. It. She's always interfering, that Romy Titus.
Look, some prisons welcome you with open arms, you know, and other prisons are just like you said, here she is again. What does she want now? But when you go in also, because I wear two hats, you know, you just realize some of the human rights abuses. I mean, you cannot have one toilet, one shower for 30 women and babies. You cannot. The poor toilet is so overused that it's also at an angle and it's about to fall over any minute. And you just realize, God. Come on. And then I'm also like, okay, I'm here for Babies Behind Bars. I'm not really here to highlight the toilet that is sideways, but I will try and see what I can do about it, you know? And that's the trust, you know? Some of them do trust me, and others don't, because yes, I wear two hats.
Well, I'm very excited to hear Babies Behind Bars, the podcast series, which I know we're going to be doing with you soon. And in the meantime, just keep doing the good work. I mean, this is the stuff that everybody's most proud of. You've had an incredible career, huge success, but this is the stuff that I think a lot of people don't know about you, that they should. It's every second that you've spent on these kids behind bars is worth it. And some child's going to grow up one day with a slightly better life thanks to you. I mean, that's no small achievement.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep doing the good work. Wow, it's hard.
It is hard. Come help out some guys, okay?
No.
I'm going to take you ringside.
And actually,
right. Gareth is coming to help me pack nappies.
I've been to prison in terms of the visits. I did a show once from Khosimampuru. It's a scary place. The women's prison is a little less scary.
It should be more scary. I think the women is more scary than the guys. Honestly. I just think they're a little bit more brutal out there. It's about survival of the fittest. I think the guys are a little bit more civil. I think the women are cutthroat. They really, really are. I was caught in a little brawl once on my way.
I see.
And I was just minding my own business on my way to an office. And that day I learned that I will never go unaccompanied. Never.
They attack you.
They didn't attack me, but they were stabbing each other with a needle, which they found in the sister's room. And I just thought, if anything had to go wrong here, I'm in the middle of this and I'm just on my way to someone's office. So even if I know where the office is, I will be accompanied.
My constant fear, because I spent 3 days in a juvenile section as part of an experience while I was still at school. And there was always a drop-off point, and I had to walk up a little hill to go to the main office. And that's where I would interact with some of the inmates there. And my greatest prayer as I was walking up the hill was, I have no phone on me, no ID, nothing. Can someone just not think?
Imagine if they think you're a prisoner and they lock you away forever. And like, this guy's one of the escaped prisoners.
That was my one constant prayer.
But I was like, look, if I have to fight you, I'm going to defend myself. But I learned a big lesson that day. So I'm not venturing anywhere in the prison.
Oh, wow. No, please.
Ever again.
Oof. And just be careful, all right? You're precious to all of us on the outside as well. It's not just the prisoners who care about you.
And your daughter needs you around, okay?
She doesn't want to grow up with a mum in prison.
No. I would never want her to go through that.
Wow, it's amazing work. I can't wait to hear these stories. Romy Titus, what a pleasure to see you. Thanks for popping by to speak to us this morning. And I hope you get some sleep and some rest as a mom of a 1.5-year-old.
Thank you. I pray for that too.
Very brave. You're brave with the babies behind bars. You're brave with your own baby. You're brave with your career. Hell of a story.
Thanks, Gareth.
Thank you, Romy. CliffCentral.com